Only smart people get up early enough to listen to the Francine Marie Show. So thanks for listening, smarty pants.
Good morning, campers! Pick up your coffee cup, make a cup of tea, pour yourself a beer. Hair of the dog, it's the Francine Marie Show!
Good morning, thanks for joining us. We got the executive director of the North Carolina Food Innovation Lab to drive from Denver, North Carolina to do the show today. It's Bill Amutis. We're going to be talking about food. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
North Carolina Food Innovation Lab is basically run by North Carolina State University, NC State University.
That's correct.
North Carolina agriculture is about, what, $91.8 billion industry. Your history has always been in food, so we'll have to delve into your life a little bit. Let's talk about the buzzword in the food industry, and that is plant-based food. We got on this kick because we wanted to eat healthier. We wanted better choices. I guess that's the bottom line. We just want better choices to choose from in the grocery store.
You look at North Carolina, where we grow about 90 different crops, fruits and vegetables here. And we offer a lot of variety then to the consumer here in the state and to people outside of our state also. You really do have a greater variety of options if you live a healthier fruit and vegetable type diet.
So do you farm out, no pun intended, the food sources through different farmers, or do you do it yourself?
No, we work with the farmers in the state of North Carolina to grow the crops that they're growing, and then we try to utilize the food that they have produced and then process it into healthy products that the consumer wants to buy. So not everybody wants to eat a raw fruit or vegetable. They want to obviously have some side dishes with different sauces or different seasonings or a different appearance even. The other thing we're doing is we're adding value to a lot of those fruits and vegetables by extracting the natural colors, the natural flavors, so that we don't have to use artificials now in our processed foods.
Right, because it's all about the good oils. Remember, we just bought any oil that was on the shelf. Now we go to olive oil shops.
Or canola oil, because it's got a little bit of omega in it. It's not a lot of saturated fat in it. So it's a healthier oil. So we process canola oil, in fact, here in North Carolina.
Canola, then we have the vegetable.
There's soybean oil, there's corn oil.
Grape seed oil.
There are actually about 40 different oils that we can produce in the food industry today. Sesame oil. We don't grow a lot. We don't produce a lot of sesame oil here in the United States. A lot of that's done offshore.
Do we want to bring anything back? And I know when you said that's a key word, offshore. Do we want to bring things back?
Well, I mean, I think from our own economic standpoint, we would just soon be self-sufficient at all times. But there are other crops that we just simply cannot grow in the United States that, you know, we have to import. Mm-hmm. A lot of the tropical fruits and vegetables, for example.
What sets this facility apart? And we're talking about the North Carolina Food Innovation Lab. I like the name. You threw that innovation in there.
We did because our intention was to work with entrepreneurs and help them to establish their companies and then help them to find where they can manufacture their product in greater quantities, thereby stimulating the economy of North Carolina.
Okay, and we're doing a pretty good job of that.
We're getting started. I mean, the facility just really opened in November. In fact, we've still got some finishing touches we're putting on it. But we're open for business from the perspective of helping people to develop new products, get those products ready for manufacture, help educate an entrepreneur. How do you launch a new food product? Because that's not easy.
What's the latest, most fabulous food product that you've seen come across the lab?
Well, I can't talk about a lot of the things we're doing, but I will tell you that we're seeing a lot of things in the beverage space. The other space that seems to be starting to become very popular is dairy alternatives. So people are coming out with frozen desserts to compete against ice cream, of course. We're starting to see some vegetarian-type, cheese-type products. So some of those things are starting to hit the shelves now and have greatly improved over the past 2 years, frankly, because of different ways we're looking at processing the products that we're working with.
And I'll just say out loud that I love some Trader Joe's because they give you some options when it comes to that butter, right? Butter made from cashews. But then if you have nut allergies, you have to think about that, too.
Allergies are a big and growing problem for the whole food industry. And we don't really understand from a food industry perspective why we're seeing more and more allergies popping up. But we're also working with a lot of proteins from plant-based sources today that don't appear to be allergenic. So, for example, pea protein isolate is being utilized in a lot of products today because people have wanted to move a little bit away from soy and they're not using dairy protein. So they've moved to pea-based protein, which there's very few allergies to pea protein, fortunately.
Because we haven't been eating them.
That's probably true.
And then corn syrup. Ooh, high fructose corn syrup. It seems to be a bad name.
It's probably gotten a bad name because of the whole obesity factor that's gone on over the last couple decades. Actually, high fructose corn syrup, eaten in moderation, like anything, is not unhealthy. It's just that it's gotten a bad name because people have associated obesity with soft drinks. And the soft drink industry utilizes a lot of the high fructose corn syrup. Even going back to sugar now in our soft drinks, if you still drink a 12-pack a day, so to speak, you're still going to be obese. It isn't the high fructose corn syrup that caused the problem. It's the sugar amount in general.
It's the sugar is the culprit. It always has been. But then we intake a little more. But I don't know how old you are, but our parents only let us have one Coca-Cola a week, like one bottle. And we're consuming a six-pack a day.
Yeah, the average consumer is up there to 4 to 6 cans a day of some type of soda. It's actually decreased now the last few years. But, you know, even the water craze, as it was, is now kind of plateaued and come down a little bit. I think it's, again, people are more conscientious about the environment, which is why another reason why people are turning to plant-based foods. They are very conscious about the impact that animals have on the environment. Soil loss, erosion, water usage, methane gas formation, a number of things that happen in the animal industry. Mm-hmm. But I don't want to belittle the animal industry. We still need animals. We still need protein. And animals provide that for us.
And you are from the meat industry, a good company in the meat industry.
I spent about 18 years with a company, a multinational company called Cargill, which is the largest privately held company in the world, working both the agricultural and food side before I took my retirement to take this position as executive director at North Carolina Food Innovation Lab.
I like how you retired and then you got a job.
I'm a retirement failure. My wife teases me about it all the time.
Well, let's go back to meat just a little bit. So we've become afraid of meat, but your plant, you invited, when you worked there, the media to come in to witness how humane you treat an animal.
Right.
So.
No, I think that's important for even the common consumer to understand that a reputable company is going to do everything possible to humanely treat that animal. Because in the end of the day, they are providing a healthy food product for us to consume.
So how did you guys come together, the North Carolina Food Innovation Lab? Was it a bunch of great minds?
Well, about 5 years ago, I'll give credit to the General Assembly here in North Carolina. They realized that the manufacturing sector was starting to hurt in various areas. For example, furniture making had left the state. The textile industry was declining. Even the tobacco industry from an agricultural perspective was in a constant decline. In fact, last year we planted the fewest acres of tobacco in North Carolina we've planted since the Civil War. So the General Assembly formed a couple of task forces. The first task force was to look at what manufacturing sectors could we excel in if we put some effort towards it. It came out that food processing was one of those sectors because we were already very good at food processing, especially from an animal perspective. We grow a lot of pigs, we grow a lot of turkeys and chickens in the state of North Carolina, and we produce a lot of eggs. So we already had that in our favor. What was surprising to that task force was that we were growing 85 to 90 different crops at that point in time, and 85% of that was leaving our state for further processing. So we felt we were leaving money on the table. So the second task force that evolved came about and looked at how do we increase the manufacturing sector in food processing? And one of the things that came out of that was the formation of the North Carolina Food Innovation Lab. And maybe by a little bit of luck, or maybe by just some good knowledge, we decided to focus this facility on plant-based foods, which, as you know, has just taken off in the last 5 years.
Right. So you say to actually, if somebody wanted to create a food processing plant, it would take, what, years and millions or billions?
Well, it would take hundreds of millions of dollars to build a major food processing manufacturing facility. And, you know, take you a couple of years of going through all of your environmental impact statements and that sort of thing. Locating a food plant in any state is a challenge. North Carolina kind of assisted the ability to put a plant here in North Carolina because we've actually hired a person out of the Economic Development Partnership in North Carolina now whose job is to focus on looking for sites in our state to build food plants. So when you're building a food manufacturing plant, you have to have access to water, obviously, electricity, gas, transportation. All those factors are very important, have to come together. And then there's the labor force. We have great labor retraining courses in our state through our community college efforts in order to train people how to work in a food plant. Working in a food plant is a lot different than some of the core manufacturing plants that we have around our state today, because there's a lot of laws in effect now for food safety.
Right. Wear nets on head. No fingernail polish.
No jewelry. You know, no ink pens in your pockets. You have to understand what it means if you don't wash your hands. You have to know all the little tricks and where you're vulnerable. So we spend a lot of time in the industry training our employees constantly on how to produce safe food. And we produce probably the safest food supply in the world here in the U.S.
So the junior colleges are your partners?
In a lot of ways, yes.
Yeah. What other partners can you say that are just rattle off the top of your head?
Well, that's a good question, because the North Carolina Food Innovation Lab is about a partnership collaboration. So we work very closely with the North Carolina Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services. Of course, they're out there helping promoting the branding and the marketing and what crops we grow in the state, especially as we look ahead to what's the next big crop, what's the next big ingredient we pull from that crop. So they're out there helping us promote some of that. We also work closely with the Economic Development Partnership, because once we have a company that wants to build in North Carolina, we find the site, we then have to get all the incentives in order to get them here to do that. And that's where EDP comes in. We also work very closely with the North Carolina Research Campus where we're located, because there's several hundred researchers on that campus that are focused on human nutrition and physiology. So that's, they're part of our collaborative effort also as we develop healthy foods.
Mm-hmm. I find it quite expensive if you want a juice. You know, everybody's on the juicing kick right now, buying the juicers and what's the best juicers. And it costs so much just to be healthy these days, Bill.
It does. And that's, I think part of that is it's not just the equipment you need to manufacture juice, even at home. The juicers are not inexpensive either. But it's also, we're buying fruits and vegetables that frankly, are probably perfect for eating as is, whereas we need to find even some outlet for those what we call the ugly fruits and the ugly vegetables. And that's part of our effort also as we work with the new Food Innovation Lab is how do we utilize those fruits and vegetables that people don't necessarily want to buy and extract either colors or flavors or juice from them.
Ooh, I'm glad you mentioned ugly fruit, because there's a new apple out there. It's called the Cosmic Crisp. I think it was developed in the state of Washington, and this apple is the apple of all apples. Like, you can keep it in the refrigerator for 6 months. It'll still keep its firm, crisp juiciness. And I guess you would call that genetically modified?
Apples have kind of declined a little bit in popularity until the Honeycrisp came along almost a decade ago already, or probably over a decade ago, Honeycrisp came out. But then, we've again seen a steady decline in the consumption of apples through the last decade. And so the industry really did need to find what was the next best apple, so to speak. And people have very specific desires, if you will, or cravings on apples. Some of us like that beautiful pink color. Some of us like something really crispy. Some of us like it a little bit tart. Some of us like a little bit sweet. All those traits have to be taken into account. And that brings me back even to our partnership. We work very closely with the new Plant Science Initiative on campus in Raleigh as they start looking at the genetics of various plants that we're capable of growing here in the States, and especially in North Carolina. So they're part of our partnership also. So if you look at the initiative we have on plant-based foods, the Plant Science Initiative, and then even eventually an animal initiative in this state, it all comes together for food manufacturing here in North Carolina.
So when we create a new fruit, 2019, 2020, and moving forward, will it still have the nutritional value? How can a lab or a scientist keep the nutritional value going?
That is part of the objective, is to make those foods as nutritionally complete as possible and superior to what we even have today. So sometimes as we do, not everything is genetically modified. We can actually do some natural selection to get healthier, more nutritious products also. And some of that just goes by even gene editing, to take a piece of DNA out of the plant, not putting something in, but taking it out, that enables that plant to then become a healthier product.
I could pick your brain all morning. You know, that's Bill Amutis. He is the North Carolina Food Innovation Lab Executive Director. What is the North Carolina Food Innovative Lab's next move?
Our next move now is to start working with both entrepreneurial companies as well as multinational companies to ideate and produce the new products that will come into the market that are all plant-based.
And who are some of those clients that you're working with? I know you can't say their names.
No, but we're working with beverage companies. We're working with processed food companies. We're working even with companies that just freeze fruits and vegetables. And you know, the stuff that we buy today, the frozen food market, for example, is making a tremendous comeback the last couple of years. And some of it goes back to the fact that we've looked at new technology about how we freeze to enable good sensorial properties on those products. Sensorial properties being the mouthfeel, the appearance, the taste. So we work on all those types of traits also.
It's all about the texture, Bill.
A lot of people love their texture, and you know, it's a lot of people don't like mushrooms because they don't like the texture. It's not the flavor they object to; it's the texture.
It's the texture, and the when people don't want to eat beef and they want to go to that Beyond,
right?
They want texture for some reason. Even if you want to go plant based, you still want the texture of the meat that you quit.
We work with a lot of plant based meat alternative companies. I think they recognize, we recognize, we still have a little ways to go. The big popular ones that are out there, and I won't say their names,
right,
but you just mentioned one of them, they know they still aren't perfect. And they know they've got a long way to go to convince the consumer to swap out their T-bone for one of their plant-based steaks. But that's the kind of thing that we'll be doing, is how do we improve that texture? How do we improve that flavor? How do we get rid of that little warmed-over flavor we tend to get in a lot of these products?
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to be a focus for us, too, in a lot of areas. Plant-based proteins are another area that's just tremendously growing, and that's what's going into these meat alternatives. Those proteins are going to go beyond. It goes to the dairy products. It goes to how do we put protein in a plant-based side dish, whether that be even a green bean or a corn casserole or something of that nature. We're looking for all different ways to get protein back into our food diet.
Would you call that or categorize that as a superfood if a green bean had the protein of a steak?
I think I would just call it a nutritious food.
That's all we want, because I don't know if the body knows that we're not getting enough nutrition.
No, right? Most of us undereat, especially on our protein. There's been several studies over the last couple of decades showing that it's not a matter of getting all your protein in one meal. A lot of us usually don't eat our meat till our last meal of the day. Really, for optimum nutritional value, we'd really like to see people get a balance of protein throughout the day and hit a specific target on the amount of protein they're consuming.
Are you into baby foods? Is the lab into baby foods?
We actually, one of our first customers came to us and wanted to do a baby food. And we kind of discouraged them to not look at that as their first entry as an entrepreneurial company. There's a lot of regulatory requirements for baby foods. It requires a lot of expensive testing. So we've encouraged them to do some work with us on a I would call it an adult beverage that's non-alcoholic, and they will be. That's, I said, if we can launch products into that space to begin with, then let's go back and revisit when you have a solid income, the whole baby formula, infant formula area.
Opening up a restaurant is tireless. I salute any restaurateur out there, but when it comes to producing food, are they in the same category of? It's because it's a different animal.
No, and the restaurants, it's interesting. We've had interaction now with several restaurants in the area, major restaurants here in the area, that they're coming to us and saying, you know, what can we do together? And so we're starting to explore some of that also, of how we can actually work with some of the bigger restaurateurs here. They want to put fruits and vegetables on their plate, but they're tired of just throwing some green beans on there or Brussels sprouts and calling it good. They're starting to say, what can we do to make an offering that's very attractive to the consumer and very tasty to the consumer and makes them want to come back to my restaurant?
Right. Got a taste for it. So my million-dollar question when you first walked in that I didn't say on the air was, why don't we just grow and raise what we need to eat right here in North Carolina so we can take some of the you know, reduce our carbon footprint with some of the deliveries of trucks.
Sure.
But we don't want to put the truck drivers out of business either.
No, we don't want to do that. But we also recognize the fact in order for us to process a lot of our food products, it costs literally hundreds of millions of dollars to build a major food plant today. Even if you build a small food plant, you're still going to have to import product to keep that plant in full operation, so to speak. In theory, yeah, it's nice to grow local, eat local, but in the end of the day, we really eat mainly raw fruits and vegetables and maybe boil them up or broil them, whatever, to prepare them. But that's about the closest we can come.
Charlotte has a couple of pretty good farmers markets.
Right.
I know Raleigh kills it. You guys have a great farmer's market. Atlanta has a great farmer's market.
Greensboro has a great one also. Yeah, the farmer's markets have really become a little bit of the hotbed of where some of the new food products are actually being launched, because small entrepreneurial companies don't have to follow under a lot of the rules and regulations that a big food company does in order to start selling a new product in small volumes. So a lot of them have actually taken their products to the farmer's markets and started selling them there. Probably about 3 or 4 new mushroom growers here in the state of North Carolina that have really grown their business by going to farmer's markets on the weekends. And you know, they're starting to develop food products now from the mushrooms they're growing because they have the income now to start looking at how do we offer the consumer something different.
I'm going to try to cut down on my meat consumption, but I need to come up with some real creative ideas that have texture and a lot of flavor. Gnocchi mushrooms are those really tiny ones. And I hear if you fry them up as if you were going to fry fish up, it tastes like seafood. I don't know if mushrooms are going to take over seafood. But
I don't know if mushrooms will take over seafood, but I'm a big proponent of mushrooms for utilizing them even in our meat analogs, because they do add a unique texture of firmness to those type of meat analog products. But we're also looking at other things. There's one small company outside of Raleigh that's actually producing crab cakes, a pseudo crab cake, I should say, out of mushrooms, and they've done very well with that product. So we're starting to see some very unique, innovative things coming into the marketplace.
Oh, wow. How can we follow the North Carolina Food Innovation Lab?
You can go to our website, www.ncfil.org.
NCFIL.
Right.
O-R-G.
.org, yeah. Right.
And we won't be able to tour this facility because it is a lab and you are working with proprietary clients who need to keep their things quiet.
Right.
Does food need to be patented?
Some foods are patented. Some of the processes are patented. Some of the ingredients get patented.
Okay.
Generally, a raw material won't get patented. But processed foods sometimes have some unique processing that we can get patents on them. A lot of trade secrets.
Well, I want to thank you for driving from Denver, North Carolina.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you. All right. Go right now. It's ncfil.org.
This is Natalie. I know you've been wondering who this voice is. I have a face for radio, and I'm the voice of the Francine Marie Show.
Oh, dear.
Only smart people get up early enough to listen to the Francine Marie Show. So thanks for listening, smarty pants.